Hi, welcome to the Miles from Home podcast. I'm your host, David Miles. Thanks so much for being with me. We've got a great conversation coming up with Matt Mays. Matt Mays is one of the most charismatic guys I know. He's one of those guys who walks into a room and, you know, it wouldn't make sense if he wasn't a rock star. It just wouldn't make sense. He's big, he's handsome, he's got a great smile, great laugh, he's fun to be around, he's got all this great energy. But you know what's cool about Matt is that there's a whole other side. He's a real deep guy, he's a deep thinker, and he loves a real conversation. You know, I mean, he might look like a rock star, but he is a deep, deep thinker, and he's a cool dude. I love hanging out with Matt, and I love this chat. I feel really lucky get to have had it. We did it on YouTube Live, so you'll hear some references to, you know, the visual content. This was first broadcast on YouTube Live. You can check it out, Miles from Home on YouTube Live. And I also did a monologue. I do monologues on the YouTube Live show, and I do a little, you know, intro where I talk about the guest I'm about to have. And in this case, I talked about, for me, Matt Mays's music being more than anything about friendship. It's about adventure. It's about partying with your buds. But really, it's about friendship. It's about deep friendship and how important those relationships are. And you know what? I agree, Matt. Friendships are so important. And I'm so lucky to call you a friend. I'm also lucky to have Matt on the show and for you to be here with me so we all get to listen to the conversation. So sit back and relax and enjoy Matt Mays on Miles from Home. Oh, there you are, buddy. We did it. We're like pros, man. We're real pros.
Yeah. I got this kind of figured out.
That's nice to see you, bud. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, man, no sweat. I was excited to get to do it and talk to you, man. It's I love our conversations, and it's nice to finally get to do it.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was telling you I was going to do a little, you know, monologue. And so, yeah, I decided that I was going to talk about, to me, I've listened to all your music, like, over the last little while. I've been getting really into it, getting ready for this. And I was thinking, when I think about you, when I think about your music and all the things you talk about, the thing that really strikes me about it is that it's about friendship. It's like, and I mean, this is me reading into it, but it feels like there's all these different themes, you know, there's all these different themes, but friendship, it's kind of, to me, is what makes your music unique. Not everybody talks about friendship the same way you do, and you do in a lot of your records. I love that, and I think it's really important to you too in your personal life because it comes out in your writing. But I think that's such a cool thing.
Yeah, well, that's nice to hear you say that, David. I feel like I've been insanely blessed with the quality and the amount of friendship I've had in my lifetime so far, and I think it's been bigger than anything, you know, outside of family. It's this reoccurring hug, omnipresent hug I have from all these incredible people. And somehow it's sort of remained really strong. Most of them I still have, and I talk to them, you know, I have a thread of friends. We talk to each other. There's 15 of us. Some are bioterror experts on preventing bioterrorism and for the UN. Others are carpenters. Others are, you know, lawyers, as you know, and we all talk all day long, and we're there for each other. And I think I don't know, I feel like it's just sort of celebrating that all the time, and I guess that's maybe why that comes out in the music, you know.
It's pretty unique. I mean, you're especially that crew, like, I mean, I know some of those guys, and I was talking to one of them just a couple of days ago, asking him about how it was going. He's like, oh, no, the thread is going strong. It's very much a part of everyone's life.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, some days, you know, we call it like it's sort of quiet on the line sometimes. And there's like, you know, nobody on. There's 15 people that could be on but aren't. And, you know, we kind of get a little lax sometimes. But during the lockdown, I felt super lucky to know somebody who's always there to, you know, you never feel alone. The threads were going off, and it wasn't just about good and funny stuff. It was about, you know, a lot of the hard times we were each individually going through, and we're not afraid to talk about it. And I think that really kind of helped the process for me, is having that whole you know, my support group there, I guess, you know.
So, well, I mean, that's ended up being what I talked about, was just this idea of like that friends are the ones that you actually, that's what makes them friends, is that you don't just talk about the good times. They're the ones that actually yeah. listen to you when you're having a hard time. People who aren't your totally. Friends don't have to listen to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, like even today, like, our, you know, our mutual friend, Jacob, you go way back with Jake, and he's really into running right now. He's running like, you know, 40 kilometers in like 20 minutes in 40 degree heat. And I'm trying to do like five, you know, getting working through injuries. And, you know, he's been on the phone with me all day trying to go like do this stretch or that stretch. And even if it's something to do with, you know, I want to kind of get out and run because it's just him, you know, I want to sort of impress him and be like, look, I did this, man, you know, and it's been good. And, but yeah, no. Friendship.
I find it very yeah. inspiring, especially that you've been friends with these guys for so long. And I mean, and your career has taken you all over the place, yet you've stayed pretty grounded with these cats, all these guys.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's we're all very, very serious about it. And our annual kayak trip is at the end of the summer, and it's like mandatory. Like everybody's family really understands. Our bond is insanely strong. It's one time a year where we all have to be together for physically at least once. So.
Right.
So anyways, yeah. So it's, I think that's my favorite, one of my favorite things in life. And, you know, I like to sing about it, I suppose.
Well, it actually is inspiring, I think, for a lot of other people. I mean, I think it's actually part of why people enjoy going to your shows and watching the performances and being part of the music, is because they feel like it is a celebration of camaraderie. The band, the way you talk about the band, right? It's very much about that as well. You know, it's,
Sorry, can you guys just keep around the DL a bit more over there?
We'll talk about them in a little bit.
Okay, yeah, sure. If I've lost my train of thought.
Oh, I was just saying the shows, yeah, like camaraderie in the band. And
yes,
the shows, the vibe on stage and in the crowd, it's very much a celebration of that, right? Of camaraderie and being together in it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's it always feels weird to just have it under my name. You know, I just sort of want to do it more like, you know, sort of under the band's name. And I feel like I've kind of gone too far with being a solo artist to do that. But it just feels like it's just a one big band together. And we're just, you know, all very close. And I think you can hear it in the music, you know, and I think playing with another band that I didn't know very well, I think the music would be way different, and I don't think it maybe would come across as well or something, or maybe wouldn't meld with the words as maybe as much as it could with, say, playing with brothers who know everything about me and know my insecurities and my, you know, my ego, or, you know, all of this.
Yeah.
I think that really is, music is so, I don't know. It's such an, it's an extension. It's another sense or whatever that I think if, you make it with people whose sort of outside fifth dimension you know really well. That sounds kind of hippy dippy, but I think once, let's say, the six of us get together and all of our sort of auras mingle, and the music just kind of happens itself. I've played music with strangers, and that's fun too, but you don't get that sort of that depth, you know.
Right.
So if somebody in the band's having a real downer, we go up on stage and we play for them, and they know that we're playing for them, or if, you know, it's a real support system too. And again, I don't know how I got so lucky with having such an incredible bunch of people in my band, you know. But say, like, I've known, say, you know, playing with Ryan, and I've been playing with Serge for 20 years now, and Ryan and Adam for a long time in Leith, and but Melissa Payne sort of just joined the band, and I've only known Melissa for 2 years, and her and I we feel like her brother and sister. Like, we feel like we know everything about each other already, and we know a lot about each other because we feel comfortable with each other. And then in turn, the music, I love making music with her because it feels like I've known her for 100 years. And so there is an argument to this, so sort of that newness in playing
well,
with somebody.
Well, I think also you open yourself up to that, right? It's the way you play. It's the way you interact with the band. You also shine a light. You're one of those people who shines a light on the band members. You like that. You know what I mean? You talk about, you want to bring attention to the band. You don't necessarily
need
the center. You want the solos to be awesome. You want it to be more than just attention on you. You know what I mean? You want it to be like, oh yeah, check out how awesome Adam is, how awesome Ryan is. Look at Leith play a guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're not going to have Leith in the band unless you want to draw attention to him because he's so insane.
Dave, man, there's people coming to shows that, that are like they're chanting for him before the show, not me. Like, we're at like multiple venues. Like he's been such a good ego check for me. Like there's like a bunch of people wearing like Leaf t-shirts, like Lethal Weapon t-shirts, and none of my t-shirts all in front of me, and they're just all looking at him instead of me when we're playing, and I'm just like. Okay, I guess this makes sense.
It's
you know?
About it's about the music. It's about the music.
So it's been good. It makes me happy. But go on with what you're saying. It's totally true. You know, you see a performer like Leith, and it's my duty to if I can in any way get him in front of more people, I will, because people need to see him play, and I feel that way about all of everybody in my band. Yeah. But.
I love it too. I mean, it's a part of the reason I love playing music too. I just love, I've been lucky to play with the same band for a long, long time. It's one of the great joys in life to
totally
experience that together. It's a very special bond. And as you said, it's something about the openness of creation, you know, when you're in that creative spirit, to be completely unafraid, as unafraid as you can be, right? And when you have that support of you're in it together, it really does change that. You can be very open. You can try things. There's the risk element is different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I struggle a lot with, I guess shyness or, you know, problems with some social situations or anxiety, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I think it's quite common with a lot of people who seem like extroverts because of the way what art they make. But with me, I have a real hard time with that. And sometimes I turn to booze or just stay in or whatever. When I'm on stage, that all goes away, and I kind of turn into this other version of myself. When I get on a stage, I feel so relieved that I'm not nervous in front of people, or I have to have a conversation with somebody. And I think that's why I have a big band, because it's like I have this gang behind me to kind of be there for me to go through this. So it's that's why I love performing so much, and that's why I look like a complete idiot up there most of the time, because I can actually explode and be my flamboyant self, you know. And but
people must assume that that's who you are all the time.
They do all the time, and then you hear sort of, you know, people when they come up to talk to you, they think like they're talking to that Matt, and they're not at all. So it kind of, to me, it's like, you know, it kind of has caused it didn't really help with the sort of the social sort of confusion, I guess, or fear, the more I sort of been recognizing it, the more I've been sort of addressing it, like off stage, so I have a really great analyst that is really great. She works with other artists apparently, and I really enjoy talking to her about this because she's very experienced. But when I'm on stage, I can, now that I've sort of identified these sort of two mats, I really enjoy playing even more. And it's like, I'm like, oh yeah, okay. It's sort of like a bull in a bullpen. You just like, you let the, you know, you tap the gate and I can just go and really enjoy it. And now I'm off stage, I'm like, okay, you don't have to be that guy. You can sort of, you know, and it's not like I'm putting on a front. It's like, it's just sort of two versions, you know, which I think is just how my mind and body work, you know. But having that big band of brothers who know both of those mats really well makes me really comfortable.
Yeah, right.
And
it's so,
you know,
interesting, man. It's just so interesting to talk about the. I went to see a therapist over the last couple of years, and first of all, it's been like the best thing ever. Like I got in there and I was like, why did I wait? Like, how did I not do this before? Like, there was a lot, and a lot of it was the same kind of stuff, right? Also, just pressure and nervousness that I didn't realize I had. I think because I like being on stage, same thing you're saying, because I like being on stage, I had this idea that there was no nervousness. Oh, yeah, I don't get nervous. Well, actually, I do. I just was hiding it. I wasn't looking at it and like, okay, well, what is it? Why am I nervous? And all these things, it's really, really helped make sense of things. Then you kind of, as you said, you know, you can identify, okay, well, actually, I'm more introverted than I realize. I need more time away from that so I can be good on stage. I need to feel good about my private time so I can be, you know.
Totally. Yeah, you got to be an introvert to be a songwriter. But, you know, that's why I think a lot of great performers or a lot of people that we look up to are probably introverts when they're in their sort of home creative zone. But then when they're on tour, they're just like, you know, it's kind of, you kind of, I think, need to have a sort of best of both of those worlds to sort of at least sort of have longevity and be able to keep your head in the game or whatever for a long period of time. It avoids, I find it confusing because it's really black and white for me. My tour life and my studio life are completely different.
Yeah.
And I really like that, you know, because I love them both equally, but I need them both to kind of like balance the other one out.
Do you ever find that you do tip the scales, that it tips too far on the tour, that you find yourself in a situation where you're like, I'm on the road, I've been on the road too long?
Yeah,
I'm too maxed out, you know.
Well, there's been a few. I haven't toured like the world excessively like some bands, though. So I've always had quite a few breaks in between. I've toured a lot, but I love it so much that there's nights where it's like, how am I going to do this tonight? But as soon as that's whatever half hour before the show, and there's people that come out to the show and. I've never taken that for granted. It's just because I've started playing for nobody, and every fan is always so like so appreciative. That I think that they gave me the spark to be like, okay, let's do this. And then as soon as the band kicks in, and then that connection is established, it's like off to the races. So you know, and knowing that's going to happen every night, it never not happened. You know, I'm sick as a dog. I can barely get out of my hotel.
Yeah, it's weird. Eh?
But I just know that that's going to happen on the stage because it's just because the audience is so incredible. And I feel like I've had such a long 20 years with some of them now that it's even if there's five people there, I know that that connection will happen and that cyclical sort of energy will start cranking
over.
Yeah,
and you give a lot. You give yourself from the minute it starts. You give it.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I think that's what I find really interesting. Just about what you were talking about too is this idea of like, you know, the stage is kind of this outward energy, and just making sure that you're repackaged, you know, you're getting enough inward energy to calibrate.
Right. Right.
And to stay creative. I mean, that's, as you said, like speaking, I mean, not to shift into the new record, but the new record, which is rad, by the way.
Oh,
it's a great record, man. It's a great record, Dog City. I mean, but it this is quite a departure in that it obviously was made during the pandemic, so it was a total retreat, right? Like this was made by you in isolation, right? Essentially.
Yeah. I work at two studios here in Toronto, and as soon as the lockdown happened, I couldn't go to either of them. And I kind of had like a small heart attack. I was sort of after about 2 days, I'm like, oh my, what I got to do? I got to figure this out because I need to create. So I built, I bought, I got this, I used Amazon for the first time and ordered, it's actually a gun, a hunting case, like a gun case, because it was the right dimensions. And I made a studio in it. So I got some really small, great Genelec speakers, and I put my computer in and all the other stuff you need. And I made it so it was all zip tied into this thing. And I put some flashing cool lights on it and I kind of vibed it up. And then, so I can close it and lock it and take it anywhere now, right? And I call it the Dudio instead of the Studio, which I'm more proud of the name. So anyways,
part of the creative process.
So this was in April, obviously. So it was, anybody who was in Ontario knows it was really chilly. But I was waking up at, I decided not to drink or eat poorly through the entire lockdown. And so I get up super early when I'm in that mode. So I was getting up at 5:30 every morning and going into the garage, where it was the only place where I could make noise, really. And so I set up the Dudio, and it was just, I had my like 8 sweaters on. I just started this album that I've always sort of conceived of making for the last, I guess, 5 years. And I wanted to call it Dog City, and I wanted it to be about being a dog.
I wondered if you had thought about that before.
Yeah.
So it's been something in your mind. Just to go on about you should describe what it's about. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. When I thought of it, I thought, I wonder if this has been something that's in his mind, because it's a cool concept.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with my dog, and I have a really great dog park nearby, and I take her there every day for like an hour. And because I don't work 9 to 5, I can do that, which is great, and it's really nice having especially a young puppy to kind of blow off some steam. But you spend enough time in a dog park, you learn a lot about communication and a lot about affection and love and sort of carnal desires and all sorts of stuff. Because dogs aren't very different. You know, I think there's a reason why we get along with them so well. They're extremely funny creatures. I find dogs just hilarious. You know, I have more at the dog park than I do at any Netflix comedy special. Like, I'm ear to ear smile all the time. I find them hilarious. So anyways, I just thought it would be kind of neat, a good time. And I don't think I consciously thought about this, but I think looking back, I was so anxious about what was going on that I just started making a record about being a dog in a dog world so that I didn't have to be in this world so much. So,
it's from the perspective of the dog.
Yeah, but it's from the perspective of a dog, or it could be a human, really. Like, if you listen to the record, you wouldn't really know it's about a dog, you know. But it is if you were to listen to it again, it'd be like, oh yeah, this is sort of about being a dog. It's sort of more about the relationship between the owner and the dog itself. But it came out in a hurry. Like I wrote 12 songs in about a month, and I used one older song because it went so well with it, and then I covered a Iggy and the Stooges song, "I Want to Be Your Dog," on it because I wanted to do a cover. But I did it all in my little studio thing,
You must have worked a lot. I listened to it. I mean, today in detail, man, and it is like it's not a quick. It doesn't sound like you rushed it. Like, I mean, there's detail in all the recordings. They're rich recordings.
Yeah, well, it was great because Tim Jim Baker did all the drums from his shed. He was out in the freezing cold in the morning too, and Serge Sampson played bass on it. Those guys, I would have sort of demos, they would send me back. They would send me back these awesome rhythm tracks to put on top of for me to put everything else on top of, you know. But since I had so much time on my hands, all I was doing was jogging and recording pretty much for that whole time. So you put that much time in. I remember, like, I couldn't wait to go to sleep because I knew I'd get up, and I couldn't wait because Tim would send me something the night before, and I get super pumped on it. And it was just, I was just so into it. It's just part of the, you know, the whole ADD thing. It's like, I got this thing and my whole mind just like goes berserk. Especially if I'm like eating clean and just drinking water, my mind can really, you know, attach onto something, which is great, and add the level of a, you know, the ingredient of a world pandemic in there, and I'll really get something done.
There's no lack of creative spirit. You got the creative spirit in you is strong.
Well, it's that was very Star Wars-ish, man.
Well, I find it awesome. Amazing that you know that, like, you're 20 years into a career, right?
Yeah.
Some people slow down. Some people just like find it hard to write. Some people, especially now, you know, I mean, they don't find it actually easier to write. They find it harder with these kind of events going on. And you just I just love it because it feels really liberated. One thing about the record. It feels like you. It feels like you're digging right into your mind. You know, and I was saying this to Joel when he put out the quadruple record. It's a bit like that with him. I like these records where you kind of feel like you're going into like the weirder parts of your mind. You're like, oh yeah, no, that's only Matt. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Which I dig. So, you know, it's just nice to see that 20 years in the game that you got the fire.
Yeah, I mean, it comes at the weirdest times, obviously, but sometimes it's not all the time, you know, like as soon as I was finished Dog City, what was cool about it is that I was doing my Mantle Music weekly concerts on YouTube, I thought it'd be fun. I told the viewers that I have a record almost done, and I let them decide what day I would release it, and somebody said May 17th, which was 2 weeks away from that time, and I was like, okay, I'll release it in 2 weeks. So I released it.
Sure.
So it kicked me in the ass to finish it, and I did. I stayed up for 3 days at the end to get it done, and I mixed it, and I wrote the last song, which is kind of neat. I've never done this before. I don't think many people have. I wrote a song called New Tricks the day before I released the album, you know, and Kate Dyke from Newfoundland sang on it, and I mixed it like literally the hour before I released it on Bandcamp or whatever. So it's kind of neat to have such new music and not sitting around humming and hawing like
Yeah.
Too loud or whatever.
I also
was just so
love
cool
it. Don't you love that you can do that now?
Yeah, I know. It was so great. And knowing that there was like, you know, I released it. I also let them decide what time, and somebody said 6 a.m. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to get up. I'm going to stay up all night, work on this and mixing. And anyway, so yeah, and it was so fun. And just like, I released the album, and there's people that were on Instagram that were waiting up for it, which was really cool. And then, but once it was done, it's sort of like tumbleweed sort of go by, and it's like, there's still a quarantine going on. I was like sucked back into my real world. And so, yeah, I haven't written, that's not true. I've written a song since, but I haven't had anything that's really kind of consuming
focus
like that.
Energy,
so it's a matter of finding that now. Yeah.
Well,
I've been wanting to come home to record with the guys. I almost came home, but then the airlines sort of stopped the social distancing, and I made better judgment of not coming home quite yet. And do the self-isolation thing, but I have a bunch of songs ready to go with the band too, which I'm excited to get going with.
Yeah, see, that's amazing. It's amazing
that
you got that. Well, I mean, and the fans responded, right? People dug it.
Yeah, no, totally. Like, I got the best, like, the one record I just, like, kick out in a couple weeks, like, exclaim, like that the best, like, I got, like, toiled over.
I actually read the exclaim.
Like,
I read the exclaim review today, actually, and I was like, wow, look at that, man, love it.
Yeah, I know. I was like, okay, that's, okay, note to self, make more animal records, I guess.
Totally,
but,
make weird records in your house by yourself in the studio. Yeah.
Yeah. I just got a four-track cassette, recorder, like kind of very similar to the first one I ever had.
Oh, cool.
So I was thinking about doing a record on that, just to, you know, with old cassette machines, you kind of have to know the song right really well before you can record. Now you can like punch in and cheat so much that it'd be nice to get back to basics and really make sure the song is good and arranged well, and you know,
yeah, the pre-pro element, just laying it all, the foundations, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how is your summer going? What's
oh,
going
every
on?
Every this is what's going on, man. I'm a tech nerd now, dude. It's crazy. I watch YouTube videos made by gamers that teach me how to figure out streaming.
That's awesome.
And I'm making an instrumental record right now.
Record.
I haven't told anybody. This is the first, and now I've told everybody. But
oh, great!
Yeah, man, and actually, Leith's involved. And
that's a good call.
Leith's involved, and Josh Van Tassel, who I play with, a guy named Dean Druyard in Toronto. Asa,
yeah.
Two guys who play in your band, man.
Oh, nice, killer.
Asa's
awesome.
Playing. Yeah, so it's an amazing group. Same deal, man. Everybody's looking for something to get into. I've always loved instrumental music. We share that. I play trumpet, and so I've been in here recording and figuring out how to record and just sending tracks off to other people and just having a blast. Just like, again, I'm taking care of my kids full time during the day, so the days are crazy.
Yeah.
And then I come out here and then just go wild for a few hours and then wake up super tired.
And not have to come up with lyrics. That's like, that's something that must be really nice. I find lyrics really difficult, and just to like, I'm sure you put this that energy into coming up with great melodies and songs still. I don't doubt that, but just having a break from like questioning lyrics, I find would be really
nice. 11 11 records of lyrics, and now I'm just like, and you know what, in my like first, all my first loves in music were jazz and instrumental music. You know, it's always been my main thing. So it's been really cool. And all these people, I'm like you, and then I love players. I love great musicians. And so I have these people laying down these amazing, like I just write the head, it's like jazz, right? And then they just, like, it's almost just about the solos.
Right.
We're blessed with amazing musicians, and we get to experience this.
Yeah.
Now, as you said, there's all these, it was actually really inspiring how you released that record. Because I think it just opens the door to how we can do things now. You know, you've got this great relationship with your fans, like through Mantle Music, you were doing those every, right? You're doing the YouTube things every week. People show up, then you can release a record. And you realize that like, okay, well, touring's out off the market right now. We're not doing that. So what are your other options to connect? And then I think a lot of people have found all these interesting ways to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it was just to keep sane, you know, and I think Adam Baldwin's chin-up sessions really inspired me. I was, like, on the chat thing, seeing all my old buds chatting and stuff, and And but yeah, it was like, you know, everybody was taking up new hobbies. Actually, one thing you might find kind of interesting is I blew off the dust of my old tenor saxophone. I've had the same one since 92.
Sounds like I'm going to be sending some tracks to you, brother. You're going to be laying some doodio down.
Yeah, it's a piece of crap, so it was a bit of a struggle, but I did my own horn parts on Dog City. I did the saxophone section on Talking to This Guy, it's called.
That's my favorite track, by the way. Favorite track.
Oh, awesome. Thanks. Leah Faye from July Talk sings backup on it, and then I heard the saxophone in my head, and then the saxophone on first, and then I sent it to her, and the next day she put the vocals on that the day before the release too, and then I heard her vocals on it. It just made it like four dimensional because it was a bit two dimensional, and she just put the vocals on, and it was like so special. But
I had no idea. But you know, sax, that's next level, buddy.
I didn't think I could remember, but it was amazing how fast it came back. I was pretty pumped about it. You can tell when you listen to it; it's not a proficient player played that part.
It's deep in the mix.
Yeah, but it was all part of the whole like not giving a darn about anything, as far as just want to do it, just make something fun, just do it and put it out. You know, that was the exercise. It wasn't about making like a perfect record. It was about seeing if I could just do it, and that let off the vice grips enough to be able to make it happen. You know,
to the point that you were playing saxophone by the end.
To the point I was playing a saxophone that hasn't been touched with old reeds for 30 years.
That's bold. That is crazy. Yes. I mean, it is. But you know what I think, you know, talking about going back to that record particularly is that, and I think some of your records have talked about this, is that, you know, there is this looseness to it. It's like you've got this liberated feel of time, but there's also like, it's serious. There's a lot of talk of this, like in the dog relationship, when you have a dog or you've saved a dog, who saves who? You know what I mean? I love that.
Yeah.
You've got a song.
Rescue Human, yeah.
Exactly. Like, and so, and I just want to show the audience because I want to show the audience your dogs. You sent me pictures.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to be able to see these, but they are. Here's Clementine.
That's come funny. On.
So sweet.
Now, she's an Italian greyhound.
Okay. And how
she's
long?
It's like a miniature greyhound. She's a little teeny, teeny tiny thing. Yeah.
And how long have you had her?
Clemmy, she's not, I think she'll be 10 next January. But I got her when I lived in New York City. And so she was a city dog for a while. And then I went off the rails and, I gave her to my folks cause I couldn't be a good dog dad. I was having like I went through the loss of a friend and breakup, and I just couldn't be there for her. So my parents took her. And now they won't give her back because they fell in love with her so much.
No way. Wow.
She loves them so much too. And they were living in St. Mark's Bay. So she's a greyhound. So she just does laps around the house. So I get to see her all the time because my folks moved to Ontario this year. So we have all these really great dog mixer parties, which is so fun. Because Rhubarb, Christine and I's dog.
All right, here comes Rhubarb, and there's Rhubarb. Ruby. It's a professional show I got going on here.
Ruby's something special too. They're both just really very smart. They're very full of character, and they're both kind of needy, but that makes you kind of get up and get out and look after them. And I mean, I think they give back so much more than we give them, but Ruby is just a card. She's so great. And especially through a pandemic or quarantine lockdown, having a dog like character piece like that in a family home just really kind of, dogs really make everything sort of ease and ebb and flow easy, like in a family that can get some pretty rough edges developed pretty quick, but they kind of keep everything sanded down and smooth with everybody for some reason,
right,
without even knowing they're doing it, you know. So she's a great dog. Yeah.
And that's kind of, I mean, I think that's, I guess that's what I'm, is there's this idea of who saves who. And I guess I kind of wondered now, you know, where were you? You know, like, is this, how personal is this? Like, how personal are these stories of these dogs? Like, where were you and where are you now? You know, and do you feel like there's been a transformation in your life over the last, since becoming a dog owner? It's a big question, so, but.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I never really knew about dogs until I was in my 20s, because we never really had dogs. So between now, then and now, I mean, I didn't know, I was even kind of afraid to touch dogs. I didn't know, it was weird. But until now, where I'm making records about being one or whatever, it's been, the spectrum has been sort of formed. Or completed, but I mean, there's just such emotional creatures, and I mean, I got Clementine's name on my neck tattooed for darn sakes, because she really got me. I was sort of couch surfing and was really depressed without knowing it. I needed help, and she really, you know, dogs can feel that, and she was always there for me, and got me out of bed when I needed to, and which makes me like, okay, I should get up and go for a run, because she needs to run, and I went running. And then if you run 5 days a week, your anxiety gets cut down by 70%, you know, and yeah. Then it's like, okay, next step. I mean, I owe her a lot, and, you know, her brain is the size of a walnut, you know, but her level of compassion and emotion and just awareness is like, and crazy, you know. Right. So that's what's beautiful about it, you know. You can put your full trust in them, you can tell them anything, and they won't tell anybody. Right. It's pretty great.
And how do you look back on those years now?
I think it was all part of the thing, you know. I'm a pretty wild dude at times, and I think it's because of self-medicating I think a mix of my anxiety about going out, and I think I just, in my DNA, have come from a long line of, you know, I'm just always like looking for stimulation and good times, or just a neat conversation with a stranger at a bar, and which is the total opposite of my quieter self. So I think there's a lot of clashiness between those personalities, and I think I'm kind of, I had a really, really great time, and I traveled on I would just leave on a trip to Morocco, and I would go, and it was great, and I'm really proud of myself for kind of having the guts to go and explore myself, is even almost to the edge, you know. But then we lost Jay, and then everything kind of turned around, and it took me years to even face what happened, you know. But again, going back to having a really great therapist and sort of taking it down a piece at a time, which is totally doable. You can actually see it happen, and, you know, sometimes you'll go 2 weeks going to sessions and you won't feel anything, you'll question it, and then you'll have one session, it'll be like, boom, you know, it'll just sort of knock your whole week out of the park, and some realization, you broke the plateau. But, it totally, looking back now, I think because I was raised well, and I'm a good person, I look back on it sort of as a chapter that I had to go through and explore, you know.
And did you take a lot, like, how much time after Jay's passing did you, so Jay was a guitar player in your band for years,
yes.
Who I knew, everybody knew and loved,
yeah.
Around here. He was an absolute staple of the scene, and of he was the sweetest guy imaginable. And I can't imagine, you know, and you, it was a member of your band. How long like after that happened did you go and say, okay, I got to do something? Was there a period of time where you kind of like, okay, I'm just going to keep on going, or did you realize you needed to face it right away?
Well, at first, like, we played the night that he, the night of the day he passed away, because we honestly didn't know what else to do, and we chalked it up to what we decided what would Jay want us to do, even though we're all in a state of shock.
Of course.
But we only knew how to play. We couldn't imagine sitting on an airplane right then and there, you know, or sit in a hotel and just go crazy. So we took a bit of flack, but I know we made the right decision.
Can't take flack after something like that. I mean, I think any action after something as large, as traumatizing as that is very difficult
it's asinine to try to decide what somebody should do in that.
That's right.
Position.
What's
else,
the rational,
you know,
thing
ridiculous.
To do? It's not rational. That it doesn't matter. It's not about that at that point. You're trying to just get through.
What really turned me around was, I think Minglewood told me, first time I ever really talked to him, I remember he said some long lines like, you do the right thing playing, you know, like, you know, I've lost a lot of buds, and that's what you got to do. You got to play through it. And I was like, I really appreciate that, Matt. It's awesome. And but it was, you know, what you want to do is what you think you should do, is to I don't know, you drink it away or whatever, blah, 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 and you can't face it. Because it's just something like that is too, you know, it's a lot of self-blame and guilt and guilt and guilt to the point where you can't take it, and you don't trust some new shrink to just bring up something this huge with, you know, but really you should, and you can, I've learned that, you know. But I think it was, again, just having a really good support system of friends and just really focusing on that one little pilot light that you know is there, but you can't see it, and just gradually, I gotta fix this up. It was gradual for me, and still is. Like, I'm still gradually getting better and finding myself. You know, turning 40 was a big one for me. It's somehow time just starts when you turn 40, at least right. For me. And it's been the best thing that I think that's ever happened to me. But it's turning 40. But and it's, I sort of feel like I have the confidence and life experience now to take on everything and have sort of look back on what has happened and apply it to other. To prevention or other friends or whatever, yeah. Mental health and things like that, you know, it's every day's, every day's still hard, you know, it's not, it's like, you know, it's something very serious, but it's just learning how to take it seriously and learn to live with it and all that, you know, and apply to making music and being, putting my emotion to put into music that makes people smile and fall in love or dance with each other in front of the fire at the lake, you know, turn it into something kind of really bad into something beautiful, metamorphosize it into some kind of magic that sort of makes people feel better instead of worse, right? That's sort of what I feel like my job is now, I guess.
Well, I really admire the fact also that you've been open about all this stuff. Do you know, like, it's like the process, I feel like you have been open. It's not, you're not just going out on stage and you're not being just a rock star that just says life is good, man. Like, some, you're open about, you know what I mean? Like, you're open about
I do. It's weird because people have mentioned that, or thank me for my, you know, being candid with this stuff and being open with this stuff. And I don't find it hard at all. I don't have, if people ask me, you know, how I'm doing, I have no problem telling them or talking about this, or it's not like confrontational to me. It's, to me, it's part of, I think it's going to help everybody to talk about it. And, you know, it was just, you know, it's incredibly common. It's too common not to talk about, I mean, I think the shell of the stigma just got tapped with a hammer. And I think we're making some good headway. And I think the more we talk about it and the more we realize it's, you know, the mind is much more fragile than, our arms and legs, and we break those all the time, you know, and I think it's time to, you know, I think people are finally starting to realize that it's okay to have a broken mind sometimes, because it can mend just as fast, probably faster than a femur sometimes if you have the right help. And you have to want to, just like anything else, you know, you have to, like, if you break your leg, if you go to physio every day and listen to what they say, you probably won't have a limp. But if you, you know, decide to screw off physio, you'll probably have a limp, you know? So just do it right,
Get a
second opinion on a physiotherapist you like.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or a psychotherapist you like. You know, it's the same thing. It's all just, you know,
it's about seeing them as the same. I think it's just awesome what you're saying, because I think it is. It's about seeing it as the same and not being a total... seen as being like completely debilitating. I think for a long time the idea was like, well, if there's something, at least in my mind for a long time, the idea of any kind of mental illness or depression or anything was, the idea was like, well, if I have it, I'm sick and I can't do anything, right? Like, it was just like I'm doomed forever.
And that's what depression, that's the whole thing with depression, you know, that's why it's a tough one, because it's telling you all those things, right? And that's when it's sort of like that, it's that pilot light, or that, just that one, you do that one jog, the second jog the next day is twice as easy as that first one. You know, but doing that first one, man, I know it well. Sometimes I'll go months, I'm just like, I just can't do it. And that's okay too. You're at least thinking about going for that run. And that should be that's the celebration that day. If you thought about it, you know, and then maybe go the next day. You know, think about it for a month if you have to, but you're thinking about it. And I think a lot of people are so hard on themselves these days, including myself, to the point where that you cause your own self anxiety, because all these idiots bozos on Instagram posting their pictures of their asses and stuff, you know, and like they're awesome, you know, perfect.
You didn't see mine from today, then? Come on, buddy. My six pack at long length.
There should be like, they should call it like bozo day on the Instagram, where it's everybody posts their most bozo, horrible camera angle, bad gym pic. Everybody should, there should be a bylaw that everybody should, this is actually me, you know, know, like,
that's right.
Like Meatball Monday, like, or something, you know, where.
I mean, but the thing is, it's actually liberating. It's kind of like what you said, like this from the beginning, this idea of like these two worlds of having like kind of a private anxious world and then this public world. But when you start to come to grips with this idea of being more open with people, as you have been with your fans, then all of a sudden you don't need to be as nervous about hiding those parts of your personality because you've shared them. You haven't been hiding them. I think we're moving into an era where that's becoming more the norm, where the idea of being a performer or being a public figure is you're not necessarily expected to just be to assume that everything's perfect. No one is. Everybody knows that everybody deals with stuff.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny how like, I mean, I'm a dude from Cole Harbour in a rock and roll band, and rock and roll is not popular anymore, which is I'm kind of into because it's underground again. But what I'm saying is though, like that whole machismo, testosterone, rock and roll stuff is so stupid all of a sudden because people are really bringing attention to where it came from, and you know, there's a lot of great rock and roll bands and a lot of great attitude is a big part of rock and roll, but like it still could be a good attitude. But I can see things changing for the better so rapidly now that whole sort of bozo scene is gonzo, and I think you know, Kurt Cobain was a big help in pushing that forward, and as far as I guess I'm getting into a different territory here, as far as sort of the testosterone-driven rock and roll music.
Yeah. I mean, he basically said, like, listen, I was bullied. He was basically bullied, right? Like, that's kind of, he came out and said, like, listen, you love me now, but I was bullied. And then, so it kind of, like, he was one of those first people that kind of said that. And we were like, oh, wait, you weren't always the coolest guy ever? No, I wasn't. Like,
He wasn't trying to be any, he was the first sort of guy, male, to be like, you know, I'm not going to be that way or whatever. Right. He wasn't the first, but he was, I think in my lifetime, I guess he was. And I don't know, it's amazing. There's all sorts of, I don't know. I just, it's really exciting time for music because they just, you know, cross culture, gender, everything now, it seems to be so much more eclectic, and it's sort of this big, beautiful, awesome frisbee flying through the sky, but we're all together on it, you know. It's I don't know.
Who's talking Star Wars now, buddy?
yeah. But what I guess, but to bring it back to mental health, is that I think there's a lot more acceptance there for everything if you're not a bozo, and if you're educate yourself. You know what I mean? And I think that's
self-awareness leads you to not being like that, right? Like being able to accept your weaknesses is all part of this idea of being kind of like. It's going to keep you from being a bozo because you're looking at yourself in a real way, and you're looking at your whatever, your imperfections or whatever you want to call them, and it helps. Yeah. I mean, it keeps it real.
Yeah, totally.
One thing you always say that I love, and actually you posted it the other day, but it's I think it was like your like a handle on your Twitter too for a long time was the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing.
Yes, the main thing is to keep the main thing. Yeah, it's carved on a wooden plaque on a little crab shack in Newport Beach. Yeah, that's where I got it from. It's in a crab from a crab. It's called a crab cooker. But I always thought it was the best sort of saying, and I kind of took it over. Yeah,
it's the best.
It is the best.
And so what's the main thing?
I think the main thing is the main thing, right? You know, that's the whole thing that's great about it. I think it makes me kind of just know what the main thing is. And I think there's like a main thing with my family, a main thing with my relationship, main thing with me first, which I think has to come first to make all the other things, you know, work. I think the music is obviously a big main thing for me, and I think if they're all sort of orbiting around the main thing, sort of equidistantly, then I think I'm happiest. So, and I have still a lot of work to do before that happens, but I think that it's important to realize we're not perfect and to enjoy the ride because it's not a very long one on that old frisbee flying through this flying through the sweet cosmos of youth.
Sweet cosmos of youth. Yeah, that's right. Oh man. Man, I miss you. Yeah. I miss you, buddy. It's really nice to get to do this. And I hope you get home. I hope I get to see you out here this summer.
I'm going to be safe about it, but I'm coming home
It's a great place to isolate. Nova Scotia, a great place to isolate.
Canada's ocean isolation.
Isolation playground.
But yeah, I'll be coming home, and if I have to play the shore club to a video camera, I'm gonna try to do it this August. So we're gonna be back.
Someone's been asking about the shore club. That's a couple of the questions. Oh, yeah. There's been lots of people commenting on how much they're enjoying hearing from you, man. And you've got great fans. You've built a beautiful thing. It's so inspiring. It's so
very lucky. Yeah, that's my gang, and I know neither of us are going anywhere, so it's awesome. And we're gonna try to get something going at the end of the summer. I don't know what it's gonna be, but we're gonna play. I'm gonna play somewhere in August at home. So
that's rad. Oh, good. That's perfect, man. Well, you know, get in touch. Get in touch when you come home.
I will, man. I will.
Thanks so much for doing this and for being so real and honest. It's awesome. Appreciate it.
Oh, awesome. Thank you, man. Awesome. Take it easy. And congrats on the show, man.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. See you.
Right on.
All right. Adios.
Peace.
See you, man.
I told you he was great. Isn't he awesome? Matt Mays, thank you so much for that conversation, and thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out the other episodes. There's lots more if you want to get in touch. I'm on Twitter at Miles David, on Instagram at David Miles. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, be kind to yourselves, and we'll see you real soon. Peace.